Tim McNally. Welcome to the Dine, Wine, and Spirit Show, NOLA Drinks Edition. Here's your host, Brian Diaz.
You went away and left me long time ago. Now you come back knocking on my door. I hear you knocking. What you keep coming? I hear you knocking. Go back where you've been.
All right, everybody, welcome to the show. Brian Diaz here with you, the unofficial start of the weekend here in the Crescent City. Yes, friends, if the person who declared opioid addiction a national emergency, health emergency, would declare himself a national psychological emergency, we might be getting somewhere. So there we go. Hey, friends, back in the studio here for the first time in quite some time. If you've been listening to the show, and I hope you have for a while, we've actually been doing the show, kind of taping it on location in certain places and these sorts of things, lots of things going on around town as always. So I'm actually here in the studio, fresh off vacation, just got back last night, seeing my good pal BJ, who's working the board as y'all. Haven't seen you in a while, buddy.
I know. I almost forgot what you look like.
Yeah, exactly. You got a haircut. You look good.
And thank you. I appreciate it. You got plenty of sun, so you got that going for you.
I got a little bit of color. I also got stung left and right. We were over in the Florida Panhandle. I got stung left and right by sea lice.
Oh, well, that's fun, too.
Which was always fun, and I didn't think I was susceptible to such things. But, yeah, and then sea lice, friends, so this is from a previous professional life that I used to have. They don't bite. They sting. They're little, they're actually really super small jellyfish. And they like to, like, bite you in the shorts and the joints and all that kind of stuff. And that's my biggest complaint. So I'm really coming back from vacation and not complaining about being on vacation, because it was really fine. We were over, as I said, in the Florida Panhandle, Seagrove area. We'll talk about that in a little bit. But BJ, while I was gone, did I miss anything?
Oh boy, let's see. You were gone a week. So
about that?
Yeah, there was the John Besh thing.
I think we got that.
Other than that, not a whole lot been going on. Just enjoying this fantastic weather.
Absolutely.
It's the strangest thing. You can go from 100 degrees and then a week later, you know, you got to put a jacket on.
Yeah, it's kind of funny. It's interesting. And of course, you heard a little bit of music that we played here at the top of the hour. We lost one of the greatest. Antoine Fats Domino Jr. passed away earlier in the week, of course. And man, if there is not a truer New Orleanian that defines music of this town, maybe other than Louis Armstrong, I guess. Mm-hmm. There is no parallel. And wow, you know, the guy sold more records in the 50s than anyone besides Elvis. I think it was 27 or 29 gold record singles in that range. And even somebody like Elvis, who, you know, is who he was, when people would call him the king of rock and roll, he would often refer to Fats as the king of rock and roll. John Lennon said at one point the Beatles would never have existed without Fats Domino. Mm-hmm. So, and I think one of the things that's really so interesting about him, many, many things that were interesting about him, obviously he had been in ill health for a number of years and wasn't really doing a lot of public performances after a couple times after Katrina. He played around a little bit at Jazz Fest and played a little bit in New York, I think, and some stuff like that. But had a stroke, you know, and I think was kind of limited to one hand. And, you know, he stayed in his home in the lower Ninth Ward for almost his entire life until after Katrina, from which he had to be rescued from his home in the lower Ninth Ward after Katrina. There were misreports about him passing away in the storm. That was not true. He and his wife were actually pulled out by a boat on their balcony. He was brought to the Superdome with many other evacuees. And then, you know, this is a man who had all of these gold records, all these residuals, could have lived anywhere in the world that he wanted to live. And a lot of musicians choose to go live somewhere else, go live in Europe and things like that, where maybe you're even more respected. He was cherished here and stayed in his neighborhood and then built a house in Harvey where he passed away. Very private man. It, you know, was a good 24 or 48 hours after, you know, the news of his death came out. When his wife passed away in 2008, it was several months before anybody actually knew that happened. A humble guy, a great guy, defined New Orleans music. To me, Rolling Stone had him I think BJ at the 25th most important rock and roll artist of all time. I'm going to say that's a little low.
Probably, yeah.
When we look at defining the genre, mm-hmm. right, and all of that, what it you can't really overstate what he did. And you go back and we maybe pull this one up for a play out of one of the, we're going to do this all day, friends. We're going to in and out of all the breaks. We're just going to do fats. And one of the first song that he recorded that charted with Dave Bartholomew, who was his band leader, also a luminary from here, fantastic musician. And, you know, did all the arrangements and many of these things. 1949 song called The Fat Man. You can make a case, I think, you know, obviously kind of a haze and a transition, but you can make a case that The Fat Man was the first rock and roll record ever. Mm-hmm. 1949.
Yeah. And that's actually something that Tim and I were talking about yesterday. Mm-hmm. That was, he considers that to be the first rock and roll song, just like what you're saying. I had honestly never heard that song until yesterday.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And it's impressive. And it goes along the same. It's sad that we've lost Chuck Berry and we've lost
yep.
Tom Petty, and now we lose Fats, and it's just, wow.
Yep. And, you know, and obviously we're broadcasting here from New Orleans, as you know, if you're listening on the radio, and as you know, if you're listening to the podcast, Fats Domino was New Orleans music.
Absolutely.
Through and through. Dyed in the wool, the sound. The generations of piano players that this city is known for stem from him in more ways than one can actually state. And, you know, I think some of the debate about what's the first rock and roll record, I mean, you can go back to some of the Louis Jordan recordings in the 40s and things like that, that are, you know, R&B records, but transitioning stuff into rock and roll. And Fats Domino was rock and roll by the 50s, by any measure, by any standard. You know, you can talk about Carl Perkins and some of these people at that time. Original inductee into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame with people like Elvis, Sam Cooke, Everly Brothers, Little Richard, some of his contemporaries. And I think that was kind of what's interesting about him is that he, and one of the many things interesting about him, he was not flamboyant like Little Richard or Elvis, especially as Elvis became. He was a quiet guy, you know, and actually suffered from stage fright and these sorts of things for, especially in later years. I shouldn't say stage fright, but had a great deal of anxiety. And here's this very humble, quiet, private guy that lived in the Ninth Ward, lower Ninth Ward for most of his life, pretty much all of his life. And, you know, became a little bit weary about playing live as his life went on. And yet when he would go out on stage, and I unfortunately never got a chance to see him in person, by the time he stopped playing, I was really not around, in New Orleans, but he, you know, he would go whip a crowd into a frenzy like nobody. If you watch some of the live recordings of what mm-hmm. he did and the energy that he would bring and the sort of genuine, easygoing nature that's so synonymous to me with the city.
Yeah, I can see that, definitely.
I know I'm kind of waxing poetic here a little bit, but Antoine Fats Domino to me is rock and roll, and to me is New Orleans, and New Orleans is music, and he is synonymous with that. And again, really, other than Louis Armstrong, there is no other. And it was a sad few days. We'll celebrate his life. It lives on in music. And, you know, if you're listening out there and you're not familiar with Fats Domino music, I think if you're from New Orleans and you're listening to the show on the radio, you have to be. It's been part of your life, whether you know it or not, for a long period of time in your entire existence, basically. But if you're, you know, you're not from this area, you might go, oh, yeah, that's the dude who sung like Blueberry Hill.
Yeah.
And you have to dig so much deeper. We're going to play little smatterings of stuff of his music here and there, actually really out of every intro and outro. BJ and I have that planned for you, so we're just going to roll Fats music all day. And, you know, our thoughts go to the family. Rest in peace. They're really, truly a great one. We lost one of the greatest. And, we're going to take a little break here on the Nola Drinks Show. We're going to come back, talk about a couple things. Got a good show coming up for you. I want to mention that real quick and have Lincoln Case from Pontchartrain Vineyards on. He went out to California. We're going to get his thoughts on what he saw related to the wildfires a little bit. And then a little bit later on, we're going to have Jim Clark from Wines of South Africa on, talking about South Africa Wine Week kicking off on Monday here in New Orleans. Here we go. A little more Fats for you. Come on back.
Standing on the corner, a rap on each and ladies, are you looking for wine to bring to your next girls' night out? Grab a bottle of Capitello Wines and enjoy the taste of fruit from Oregon's Willamette Valley. Capitello has a wide variety of wines to choose from. Sauvignon Blanc, Pinot Noir, dessert wine, and a Brut Sparkling that's a blend of Pinot Noir and Chardonnay. He'll even stop by next time he's in town. So grab the girls, have fun, and enjoy Capitello Wine. Cheers.
Time for lunch? We've got you covered at Sobu.
Chef Juan Carlos whipped up special two-course lunches that start at $14.
Try our Creole Cuban sandwich and pair it with a bowl of our gumbo.
Of course, Sobu's full menu is also available.
And don't forget Sobu's version of Commander's Palace 25-cent martinis.
Available Monday through Friday, 11:30 a.m. to 3:30 p.m.
Join us at Sobu for our speedy lunch at 310 Charter Street in the Quarter.
Complimentary parking next door at the W Hotel.
Sobu,
life is meant to be lived, not endured.
Hi, I'm Dickie Brennan, and I'd like to invite you to our new Black Duck Bar located on the second floor of Palace Cafe. Named after the Prohibition's infamous rum runner, the Black Duck features over 120 rums as well as an extensive tequila collection. In addition, acclaimed master French chef Rene Bajot heads up the small plates and charcuterie kitchen. Join us for happy hour Monday through Friday from 4 to 7 p.m. with half-price small plates, local draft beer, and tap wine.
Well, I'm ready. I'm willing. And I'm able to rock and roll all night. I'm ready. I'm willing. And I'm able to rock and roll all night. Come on, pretty baby. We're gonna rock, we're gonna roll till the broad daylight. Because I'm ready. So you better come and go with me. We're gonna rock and roll. Tell them all about free.
Talking on. All right, everybody, welcome back to the show. Yep, Antoine Fats Domino Jr., the late great Antoine Fats Domino Jr. A little bit of I'm Ready 1959, I believe. And yeah, okay, we were talking about the Fat Man being the original rock and roll record, and you can make a case for that. We're hearing this 10 years removed from that recording. And that's rock and roll, man. That's rock and roll with a New Orleans style that is just inimitable. Anyway, I'm sorry. So there you go. I want to talk about something else that BJ mentioned here at the top of the show, and I mentioned being on vacation. And I'll tell you a little bit about vacation if I get a chance. Not that everybody wants to hear where I went and what I did, but there is some relevance to this, and I'll get to that. We talked a little bit about what happened with the Besh Restaurant Group. And one of the things, this is news, I think if you don't know, John Besh of the Besh Restaurant Group has been accused by numerous women of sexual assault, and many things have started to come out about the culture in the restaurant business, the Besh Restaurant Group being, of course, no exception, obviously, as we see. And these are serious things. These are serious, legitimate charges. You don't have 25 people come out and make accusations and have that's not collusion, friends, to try and extract money. That's the real deal. And, you know, I always make jokes about the president at the top of every show, which I've been doing for a number of months because it writes itself and I find it pretty easy and I find it pretty funny. But a friend of mine that I just saw today, very smart guy, and who is a bartender here in town. And we were talking about when you have the person at the top being a toxic person, that creates a culture. And if you are running a restaurant group and you create this culture, you don't have an HR department, you say that when somebody has concerns about females, obviously in most cases, this can go other ways for people of different gender orientations, sexual orientations, and males as well, heterosexual males as well. But when you have concerns about you're told that if you wanted to report or needed to report, I should say, sexual harassment, sexual assault in the workplace, and you were told to go report it to a female manager, that's not an HR department, friends. That's not how this works. And one could also argue that creating a corporate culture from the top down, are you doing it to protect your behavior? Are you doing it to protect these attitudes by not having an HR department, or maybe not even necessarily having an HR department, but by legitimately addressing these as issues? I mean, what are you just kind of creating a frat house thing here? And this other conversation I was having with a friend of mine too, which you know, these are, anyway, I'm just going to leave it. I'm leaving everyone anonymous in this situation because I'm not a victim and I'm not an accuser. But talking about another restaurant in town here in New Orleans, where he bared witness to numerous examples of sexual assault, brought it to ownership's attention, was basically blown off, was telling me how a particular floor manager, his superior, basically spanked a bartender who had been on the job for a week on the backside for no particular reason. I mean, not, there's never an acceptable reason in the workplace for that, I guess, other than if you're a baseball player or a football player on the field. And that's not okay. And then was also apparently sending pictures of his junk to a 19-year-old hostess. Okay, friends, this, and the point of why I'm telling you all this is that this stuff, it has gone on and continues to go on in many businesses and in our society and in our culture. The leader of this particular country is somebody who is essentially on record with admitting this so-called locker room behavior and writing it off as, I don't know, boys will be boys or something. This is not okay. Okay, this is the workplace. This is being a professional. This is allowing people to do their job, to develop their career, to develop skills, to work in an environment where you're being judged solely on the job that you do, regardless of your skin color, regardless of your sexual orientation, regardless of your gender, of anything. And when we are allowing this to happen, and the restaurant industry is a bad one. Restaurant and bar industry is a bad one for this, and we're seeing this come out. Now, what I do think is hopefully a good thing, and this is something that needs to continue to be discussed, is maybe now we're starting to see some repercussions for this behavior. If you can be Harvey Weinstein and be taken down, or frankly, if you can be John Besh and be taken down, then maybe we're actually getting into a place where these conversations can be had in circles that were previously deaf to it. And look, one of the things that I want to say too is that, you know, when you do something, nobody's perfect, okay? I'm not defending anyone here. Don't get me wrong. Creating institutionalized sexual harassment in your corporation is wholly unacceptable. But nobody in this world is absolutely perfect. Nobody's saying that you're, you know, an irredeemable human being for some of these things. But when you are using your position of power to manipulate, and what seems to be the case with the Besh Restaurant Group, is to perpetuate a culture of this, to actually cultivate a culture of this, that's something very different than a misplaced comment or perhaps an inappropriate slap on the backside. And again, I'm not saying these things are okay, but that might be just somebody in a moment of indiscretion who probably even maybe their heart is in the right place and they know better. When you are institutionalizing it in these situations, and I'm not just picking on John Besh, we see this institutionalized in all kinds of industries, as I said, in all kinds of walks of life everywhere. And the restaurant industry is particularly bad for it. And we need to continue to address it. Now, one thing I do want to say too on the topic, and we're, well, and here's where I'm going to go with this, is that, you know, reading some of the articles in both the local and national press lately about this, and I'm not looking to praise myself here or anything like that by any stretch of the imagination, but I'm reading a lot of stuff that, oh, the restaurant industry is waking up to this kind of stuff. And frankly, I'm going to use the word bullocks. There have been many people in this industry for a long period of time who have been talking about these issues. I've had very brave people. This show, my show's been on for a little bit over a year, year and two, 3 months, something like that. One of the very first shows we did was on gender issues behind the bar, and three very talented, strong, brave female bartenders came on the show to talk about the harassment they've experienced in the workplace, both from management as well as from customers, the culture. We've talked about sexual harassment several times on this show. Molly Bird and Mark Shetler from Proof Positive, working to prevent sexual harassment in the bar industry, come to mind. Scott and Felicia Mayer, also a few months ago, who have been on talking about sexual violence and harassment in the bar and hospitality industry. So there are people that are out there that are talking about this. So this isn't some sort of new revelation because it took, you know, a John Besh to be accused of this, that now all of a sudden, not hopefully the companies are waking up and you need to reevaluate your HR policies. You need to create mechanisms for people to be able to come in and address these things and not fear losing your job, not be intimidated, not have your livelihood taken away because you have been treated wrongly at work. Okay, so fair enough. I mean, maybe the dialogue is broadening. It's coming out into light a little bit more. Fine. But don't say that this is some sort of new thing. This has gone on. People know that it has gone on. And there are people that are brave enough to be out there and talk about it. And this is something here on this show that we are going to continue to talk about. As I said, I just got back from vacation. So we're going to bring some people and we're going to continue to talk about this as we do here on the Nolan Drink Show. One of the things that we think is important to talk about, and we will continue to do so. So stay tuned for more on that. What we're going to do is we are going to take a little bit of our bottom of the hour break. And I mentioned we're going to have a Lincoln Case on from Pontchartrain Vineyards. Lincoln went out to California just for a couple days to go check on some of the grapes and meet with some of the growers and stuff that grow the grapes out there for the winery over there on the North Shore of St. Tammany Parish, just north of Covington. And we're going to get some thoughts to him. Also some of the stuff related to the wildfires firsthand. So we'll be back with Lincoln Case. More Fats, man. Ain't that a shame. 1955. Come on back.
Although I'll cry, ain't that a shame? My tears feel like rain. Ain't that a shame?
French Market is open daily with pop-up fresh markets on Wednesdays and Saturdays. The Crescent City Farmers Market is at the French Market each Wednesday, rain or shine, from 2 to 6 p.m. On Saturdays from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m., find new and different vendors offering everything from fresh bagels to fresh herbs. Vendors change weekly depending on weather and seasons, so check them out often. Visit frenchmarket.org for a list of farmers market vendors, chef demonstrations, live music, and special events.
Are you looking for the best buns? Well, we have them at Bayou Burger in the Quarter. Wait till you bite into one of our acclaimed burgers like the Cowboy Burger, Tiebreaker Shrimp Burger, the world-famous Gator Burger, or you can build your own with endless combinations. It's all fresh meat, never ever frozen. Everywhere you look, there's big screen TVs where you'll never miss a minute of the action. Boasting the largest balcony dining in the French Quarter, you can watch all the action pass you by on the street. Find the best burgers in action at Bayou Burger. 501 Bourbon at St. Louis for the best buns on bourbon. It's Bayou Burger, baby.
Are you looking for a great place to enjoy great handcrafted and vintage cocktails? Victory is located at 339 Barone Street in the heart of downtown New Orleans. We have a variety of spirits, a talented team of bartenders, and great gourmet small plates. Our mission? To preserve an era when cocktails were made with artistry and pride. Grab your friends and come enjoy the ultimate cocktail experience. Give us a call to book your next private event or go to our website, victorynola.com. See you soon. Cheers.
Brian Diaz here with NOLA Drinks. Discover South Africa Wine Week from October 30th to November 5th, featuring numerous events at fine restaurants, bars, and bottle shops all around the area. Just like New Orleans, South Africa is a place of great cultural diversity and produces fine wines of tremendous value and character. From crisp, refreshing Chenin Blanc to complex red blends, there's something for every wine lover. To learn how you can experience South Africa Wine Week, visit WOSA, that's Wines of South Africa, WOSA.US/events for more. And until then, cheers, y'all.
Hi, this is Kevin Richards with Sazerac Rye Whiskey. In 2008, the Louisiana legislature made the Sazerac cocktail the official cocktail of New Orleans, affirming what New Orleanians had known for over 150 years. You just can't beat a good Sazerac. The Sazerac cocktail is the quintessential New Orleans drink, perfect for celebrating the arrival of fall festivals, football season, or just being proud to be a New Orleanian. For the official recipe, visit www.sazerac.com.
Hello, this is Ron Bartholomew, and to my great city of New Orleans, I'd like to introduce to you Touch Vodka. This artisan handcrafted ultra-premium vodka is uniquely distilled from Florida's finest wildflower honey and American grain. Touch also produces key lime, Valencia orange, and ruby red grapefruit selections that are infused with natural oils of locally sourced fruit, which results in a unique 80-proof vodka with no sugar added or coloring. Touch is now available at Doranax, Cello's, and the Corporation Grill and Bar, and many other locations across Louisiana. This holiday season, sit back and relax and enjoy Touch Vodka.
Hi, Jack Jelenko here, local wine guy, suggesting that great handcrafted Pinot Noir from Oregon doesn't need to be expensive. Consider Yamhill Valley Vineyard Estate Pinot Noir from the oldest family estate in the Willamette Valley of Oregon. It's rich, ripe, wonderfully balanced, and it's only about $20 at your favorite New Orleans wine shop. Yamhill Valley Vineyard. Top quality doesn't need to be expensive if you know what to drink. Ask for it wherever you buy wine. Cheers.
Goodbye, Joe. Me gotta go. Me on my own. Me gotta go. On the pier or down the bayou. My boy, sweet boy. Me on my own. Son of a gun, we'll have big fun on the bayou. Jambalaya, conference pie, feeling gumbo. Cause tonight I'm gonna see my machete meals. Big and tall.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the Noel Drink Show. Brian Diaz here with you, WGSO 990 AM in New Orleans and in podcast land, wherever you may be. Yep, more Fats Domino, a little Jambalaya. That was a song written originally by Hank Williams Sr. But hey, there's a version there for you. I mean, talk about a dude who should sing the song. There you go. And talk about a dude that we should be talking to right now, Lincoln Case from Pontchartrain Vineyards. They're on the phone. Taking my call, are you?
Yes. They said you were an insurance salesman. So I was like, I don't want to talk to an insurance salesman.
You know, Lincoln, I was just joking with BJ, you know, working the board as he always does here on the show, and he called up and our new tasting room hire. So everybody who listens to the show regularly knows this, full disclosure. I have a relationship with the winery, a tenuous one, but a relationship with the winery. And she, you know, doesn't take the call and says he's in a meeting. And I'm like, darling, you're not going to have a job. You got to take my call. Come on.
Yeah. She's like, an insurance salesman? Do you want to talk to him? I was like, I don't know how she got that from Brian, but who knows?
Yeah, there you go. So we got a couple things that we have to work through with Melissa. Is that, yeah, okay, good job gatekeeping the scam calls. Good.
Right.
Apparently, she thinks BJ, who's producing the show, is an insurance salesman, and B, she doesn't want to take my call as the general manager of the winery. So we'll work through all this over the weekend.
Yeah, it'll get there.
it'll get there. So how you doing, man? How are things going up there in Bush, Louisiana?
Everything is going great. It's a beautiful day today. Sunny and cool, and a little bit of a breeze, and. I hate to be in the cellar today, but we're back there filtering some wine and racking off some fruit I guess it's wine already, so doing good.
There you go. Well, Lincoln, one of the things that I want to talk to you about here while we have a couple segments is that something that we've been talking about on the show a lot, obviously, are the wildfires in California, and right. You just did a little jaunt out to California to go meet with some of the growers involved growing the grapes for the winery that, you know, that we source grapes from to make the wine. And so tell us a little bit about the trip. I mean, we got some time to talk about this. We don't have to talk about the wildfires entirely, but you went out there. Winery works with independent growers. So you were working with a guy that helps Fred Buonanno, a mutual friend of ours, that helps coordinate some of this stuff. But then you went around and basically met with some of the folks that are producing the grapes for Pontchartrain Vineyards.
Right. And again, you know, when you've contracted for a good chunk of money worth of fruit and you know, a lot of cell towers were down out there, a lot of people's lines weren't working, and I was having trouble getting a hold of a couple of the growers, and it was getting kind of late in the season, so I said, you know, shoot, I'm going to run out there and check on things and make sure they're okay and the fruit's okay, and it ended up working out really well for me. Most of the vineyards are that we source from at Pontchartrain Vineyards are in the Mendocino area, Ukiah, Hopland, that area, and they were I don't want to say in between the fires, but definitely north of the major fires. When I was driving up from San Francisco, every exit going through Napa and Sonoma was closed off of the main highway. You couldn't even exit the interstate, which was a little scary. But it was kind of an odd thing when I was pulling into my hotel. I could see a fire in the up in the hill right behind the hotel, and that just happened to be one that had sparked up. And they saw it and had it out in about an hour, but, you know, the winds were calm and, you know, thank goodness, because that, you know, again, a new area that could have been really messed up. So,
yeah, you know, this, and so many of the fires, I think, and we've talked about this on the show a little bit, people don't understand a few things that, you know, yes, there was a lot of rain, last year during the winter. 5 years of drought builds up a huge amount of, fuel. And then also you have a situation where these very dry, very brisk winds blowing dry wind on shore, you know, basically it doesn't take anything but a cigarette out the window. When I grew up out in California talking about, you know, sometimes people were dragging a chain or something off a trailer on, you know, on their vehicle, and that would spark a fire on the side of the road. And normally that stuff doesn't really matter. I mean, I shouldn't say it doesn't matter, but it gets put out really quickly. In this case, it's just a one big tinder box, and fires just blew up, jumped fire lines, jumped highways. And Lincoln, you were talking about Mendocino. There was one pretty of the, you know, three or so major fires. One of them was in Mendocino, not as big as the one in Sonoma, the Roseville fire, the one in Napa, the Nuns fire, and these other ones. But, you know, Frey Brothers, I believe, winery was destroyed in Mendocino. Were people talking about, I mean, I'm sure it was a major topic of conversation still while you were there.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, you couldn't walk into a store or a restaurant without the first question being, "Is how's the smoke out there today?" Because people right. who were inside were curious, just because apparently there were a couple of days where the smoke just hung over everything. And of course, the big concern on everyone's mind is just about everybody out there knew somebody or several people whose homes had been lost in the fire. And so there was a lot of concern over the people who had lost their homes, and of course a lot of people lost their lives, and you know, a couple of the growers who were involved with trying to, you know, help, you know, going to pick people up, who, you know, workers or friends who were in the fire's way, they said it was absolutely unbelievable how fast everything moved.
Right.
People would be running out their front doors and jumping into cars, and the fire was already in, you know, engulfing half their house. And, you know, 70-mile-an-hour winds and super dry conditions don't really lend themselves to being able to fight the fire very well, and they were having quite a bit of trouble.
Yeah, I know many of the resources right out of the gate were not even dedicated to fighting the fires. They were actually dedicated to evacuation.
Exactly. And again, the fire you were talking about up in the Mendocino area, one of the vineyards we source fruit from, they didn't have any damage. And when I went up there, everything seemed quite fine. But the fruit was getting a little long in the tooth hanging on the vine because the road was closed for a few days, and then, you know, a lot of workers have been displaced and just left, and they say it's really kind of a difficult situation. And I know there are a lot of people down in Sonoma and Napa who still had Cabernet hanging on the vine, and I think you're going to get a very smoky Cabernet if you're trying a 2017 vintage from Sonoma or Napa.
At least in a lot of places, right? I think, yeah. Yes.
So, and again, I was very fortunate, except for that one incident with the Zinfandel. All of the vineyard and vineyard owners I had were doing just fine, except for one exception, which was, I guess, kind of, you know, in things like this, you look at the humor or the kind of lightness of issues. And one of the growers who I had gotten some fruit from, he had already picked my fruit.
Lincoln, do me a favor, because you can't. You can't tell the bear story until after we take a break, because we got to take a break in about a minute. You got to tell the bear story because it's good. You told me the story this morning on the phone, and there was a part of the story that you didn't want to tell me, or didn't want to tell on the air. I want you to tell that part of the story on the air. Just use proper language.
Okay.
that's all. And and it's like, you know, just if you're going to say, you know, does a bear, you know what, in the woods, just, you know, swap the word, all right?
I will do my best.
Okay. So here's what we're going to do, man. We're going to take a little break here on the show, and we're going to come back, and we're going to hear about something about bears in a vineyard, and you fill in the blank what they do in the woods. More Fats Domino, Blueberry Hill. Come on back.
But all of the vows you made were never to be. So we're apart. You caught a missile.
Did you know that there's a vineyard and winery making quality table wines just 1 hour north of New Orleans? At Pontchartrain Vineyards, we produce award-winning wines from our 15-acre vineyard, as well as premium wine grapes sourced from the West Coast. Try our light, crisp, Louisiana-grown Blanc du Bois, or have a glass of Chardonnay, Zinfandel, or our Cab Syrah blend made right here in Louisiana. There's something for everyone at Pontchartrain Vineyards. For more information, go to PontchartrainVineyards.com.
Oregon wines are taking over New Orleans. The reason? They're delicious. Next time you're shopping for wine, grab a bottle of Sass Wine. Located in the South Salem Hills of Oregon's Willamette Valley, Sass Wine produces small amounts of handcrafted, high-quality wines that include Pinot Noir, Pinot Blanc, Pinot Gris, Chardonnay, Riesling, Sauvignon Blanc, and Rosé of Syrah. A perfect balance of full fruit with fine, supple tannins and firm acidity is what makes truly great wines, and you'll find that in every bottle of Sass Wine you drink.
Savory crab meat cheesecake and decadent white chocolate bread pudding are Palace Cafe originals. For nearly 26 years, Palace Cafe has been serving award-winning cuisine in the historic Warline Music Building. Located on Canal Street at the edge of the French Quarter, Palace Cafe is open 7 days a week for breakfast, lunch, and dinner, and open for jazz brunch on the weekends. Make sure to try one of their refined classic cocktails or a glass of wine from their nationally recognized wine list. Palace Cafe is located at 605 Canal Street.
Hello, Josephine. How did you do? Do you remember me, baby? Like I remember you. You used to laugh at me in Hollywood.
All right.
Here we are.
Hey, we're back on the air. There we go. Got that right, Slider. We're not going to interrupt Fats very much. So my girl, Josephine, there you go, live version. And hey, we are, speaking of being live, Lincoln Case from Pontchartrain. Are you alive, Lincoln? You're there on the radio with us?
I am functional. Alive, that's another question.
That's fair enough. That's a debate for another time. We'll have that privately.
Excellent.
So I wanted to take a break because let's tell the bear story, because I did enjoy that. Like you said, in these situations, aside from the human tragedy, of which is the most important thing in all this, let me say this real quick, Lincoln, first too, is that the wine industry on a whole will be fine. Everything will be fine. Now, certain wineries and things like that, certain vineyards, certain people have lost their livelihood, but that's a serious thing. But many, many people, as you said, lost their lives, lost their homes, these sorts of things. But that being said, a point of strength, I guess, is to move through these things with a bit of humor. So go ahead, man. That was a great story about the bears.
Right. And that was kind of the way this whole story started was a group of us were sitting in the Bluebird Cafe in Hopland having lunch, and we were kind of different people were complaining about things, and then someone said, well, I have the least complainable issue of all of y'all. He goes, y'all want to go for a ride? And we went trekking over to Anderson Valley, And we walk up to his winery and then walk through his winery to his through the woods, and we come down kind of up to this I guess you call it a bluff that was about 20 feet, and then below the bluff is a fairly small vineyard, and we're here, what is it? He goes, just be quiet for a second and watch over there in the far corner of the vineyard. And as we're watching, you all of a sudden notice a bear walking through his vineyard. And then you see another one and another one. And we're like, are those bears? And he goes, yes, they're California brown bears. And we're like, what are they doing in your vineyard? He goes, eating all my grapes. And we said, well, can't you do anything about it? And, of course, the California brown bear is the state bear of California. It's protected. He called up Wildlife and Fisheries, and they basically said, look, with everything that's going on, there's no way we can relocate these bears. They must have come down from the hills above you from the other side where there's fire. And so they've kind of taken camp in his vineyard. And he said, it's really frustrating because they kind of disappear for a couple hours, but, you know, they always show back up, and nobody will go pick grapes in this Pinot Noir vineyard because the bears are just lurking around. And
no, says, no amount of hazard pay is enough to go pick around bears.
Right. but he had the funny. He said the funniest thing is they're kind of like clockwork. They have this little grassy patch they lay in, and there are four bears total. And he said one of them will get up, and they'll kind of walk through the vineyard on three legs and kind of shovel grapes into their mouths with their other front leg. And then they'll eat for about 45 minutes, and then they will go to the end of the vineyard and remind him that they've been there by relieving themselves in huge amounts.
And there's the fill in the blank word that we were talking about.
Exactly.
And then take a nap.
And again, this gentleman had the best attitude. He's like, look, you know, if the worst of my problems is I get to sit out here and watch bears eat and defecate all over my vineyard, it's kind of funny.
Yeah.
I'll survive.
Right, there you go. They'll be around next year, and you've got a good marketing story. You've been a good steward of nature. And then I'm thinking too, it's like, man, aside from maybe having to flee the fire, if I'm one of those bears, that is the life right there.
Yeah, and he said his big concern is now that they know the vineyard's there, are they going to show up?
right. And it reminds me of the old Yogi Bear thing, right? You know, I'm smarter than the average bear. So I know where to get something good.
Right.
Now they just need to wait for the late harvest grape so they can get a little bit of a buzz.
Exactly. Well, these were pretty well along, so I think those grapes will start having a little fun with the bear. The bears will have a little fun with them if they don't leave. But it was amazing the amount. He said he averaged between the four bears, they were eating almost a ton of fruit a day.
That's incredible. That is, and when you, and I know maybe for listeners it's out there, it's kind of hard to picture what a ton of fruit might look like. But when we put grapes in what we call them lugs, and they're these sort of square bins, if you will, and they typically, the standard size is it holds a half ton. That is a big thing full of grapes. And if they're eating, four bears are eating two of those. Talk about, you know, before you take a nap and going and relieving yourself, you're going to be doing that all day after that much fruit.
Exactly. It's a scary amount of fruit. And he said if they're there for another week or so, he you know, they'll have picked the vineyard clean, and he won't even have to worry about it. And
right, no need to harvest.
And he said he wished they would actually fertilize more on the vines rather than off to the sides of the vineyard. So.
Right, there you go. Got to figure out how to incentivize so the bears eat as much as you want, return it to the earth in my area.
Yeah. Properly placed. Yeah.
Well, Lincoln, do me a favor real quick, because we got about 2.5 minutes left, and I want to get to a couple things. What were people saying about smoke taint? A lot of concern, medium concern?
Up in the Mendocino area, not a lot of concern at all.
Okay.
I spoke with a winemaker down in Sonoma, just to check it with him, a friend of mine, and he said there was a good bit of concern down their way. Specifically, he mentioned a lot of people still had Cabernet fruit that they hadn't picked, and they were concerned about that. But they said that it wasn't kind of like we used 2005 Katrina as a mark of you know, when things were really bad. They keep saying nothing like 2008.
Which was very bad. Yes.
Yeah. Apparently, he said the fires weren't quite as bad as far as the damage the fires did, but apparently it was a little bit less windy, and there was a lot of smoke that just hung over the vineyards, and everybody had smoke issues that year.
Yes, Mendocino in particular was really bad in 2008. It's actually a pretty easily identifiable vintage if people even release the wines because of that. Well, Lincoln, I got about 30 seconds left, maybe a minute. Got the last Jazz in the Vines concert of the season coming up this Saturday, Creole String Beans. Can you tell people about that? Just basic.
Absolutely.
Cool.
This will wrap up our 18th season. And Creole String Beans, great band out of New Orleans, a lot of fun and a good time. And we'll have Old School Eats food truck out here, and I invite everyone to come on out and check online. We have a couple good specials, specifically two tickets and a bottle of wine for $25. You come out with a couple of chairs, sit and enjoy the music and the ambiance and the weather. And it'll be, I'd bring a jacket on Saturday. It'll be a little cooler, but still definitely nice kind of outdoor weather.
Absolutely cool. Friends, check out PontchTreeVineyards.com. All the information you need is right there. Lincoln, thanks for taking a little bit of time today. Tell Melissa, as far as I'm concerned, we'll call it one strike. She still has a job.
All right. Let her know she can come back tomorrow.
All right, buddy. I'll talk to you tomorrow, man. Take care.
Sounds good.
All right, friends. We're going to take a little break here on the Noel Drink Show. Yeah, Fats Domino, Lady Madonna, Beatles cover. Come on back.
Shake things up or find the bartender in you? We mean literally. At the New Orleans Drink Lab, you'll do just that. We teach you the history and tradition of classic New Orleans cocktails. Then you get behind the bar and make them. Master classes are fun, interactive, and hands-on. Great for small groups and team building. Come enjoy the ultimate cocktail experience. You mix, muddle, and master the art of cocktail making. Visit us at 343 Barone Street. Or go to our website, drinklabnola.com.
Brian Diaz here with NOLA Drinks. Discover South Africa Wine Week from October 30th to November 5th, featuring numerous events at fine restaurants, bars, and bottle shops all around the area. Just like New Orleans, South Africa is a place of great cultural diversity and produces fine wines of tremendous value and character. From crisp, refreshing Chenin Blanc to complex red blends, there's something for every wine lover. To learn how you can experience South Africa Wine Week, visit WOSA, that's Wines of South Africa, WOSA.US/events for more. And until then, cheers, y'all.
With the season's beautiful weather, it's a perfect time to take a drive across Lake Pontchartrain and visit New Orleans' only local vineyard and winery, Pontchartrain Vineyards. Our tasting room is open Wednesday through Sunday from noon till 4, or by appointment. Come enjoy a flight of our wines in our classically styled French Provençal tasting room, or pack a picnic lunch and enjoy a bottle of wine on our patio overlooking the vineyard. While you're there, ask about our wine club. For more information, go to PontchartrainVineyards.com.
Hey, New Orleans, Jack Jelenko here, local wine guy. If you're listening to this show, you love good food and good wine. And a great wine with our plentiful fresh Gulf seafood is the Domaine St. Rose Coquille Blanc, a crisp, balanced white blend from the south of France. Whether it's with fresh oysters, crab, redfish, or shrimp, this Domaine St. Rose Coquille Blanc will not disappoint. And it's a great value at around $14. Domaine St. Rose Coquille Blanc. Cheers!
Tim McNally, welcome to the Dine, Wine, and Spirits Show, NOLA Drinks Edition. Here's your host, Brian Diaz.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the NOLA Drinks Show. Hour number two, Brian Diaz here with you, WGSO 990 AM in New Orleans and in podcast land, wherever you may be. Thanks for listening to the show, friends, as always. And as you know, something we've been talking about for a little while here on the show coming up, kicking off on Monday. October 30th is the inaugural South Africa Wine Week taking place right here in New Orleans. And the man with the plan who's putting this on, Jim Clark from Wines of South Africa, is here on the line, I think. Jim, are you there?
I am. How you doing?
Good, Jim. How are you, man?
Good.
Good. Well, let's take care of some important business first. You just got back from your honeymoon, man. How was the trip and congratulations?
Thank you very much. Yeah, it was fantastic. 2 weeks in Japan, eating our faces off, actually.
Pretty good. Now, did you get a bit of sake? Did you get that kind of thing going on too?
Oh yeah, we drank a lot of sake. Visited three different brewers. Really got to see the kind of inside, what goes into the sausage with sake, which is a really fascinating thing.
And did you do shochu as well?
I had a couple shochus. We didn't go down to the south part of Japan, which is where a lot of the shochu production is. So I didn't visit any distilleries, but next time.
There you go. So you got to see the polishing of the grain and that kind of thing with the sake?
Oh, yeah. And it's great. October is really when they start cranking up production because the smaller breweries don't produce during the summer, but during the hot months. So really right at the beginning of the season, which is really nice to see.
That's cool. Well, welcome back. I know you just got back a few days ago, so jet lag is probably still a thing, I'm guessing, a little bit.
Oh, yeah. The 13-hour time difference is like nothing I've ever had before with jet lag. Normally, I can go to Europe and be okay, but this is something.
Yeah, you know, I when you get into those day-and-a-half kind of numbers of hours, or half-a-day kind of numbers, that math doesn't, you can't just sort of nap that off or stay up a few hours later or wake up a few hours earlier. You're just jacked. I mean, you're just jacked entirely.
Your body does not know what's going on.
Exactly. Well, and no rest for the wicked, Jim, because we got South Africa Wine Week coming up here starting on Monday. So I know, I'm guessing that you're going to be getting on a plane pretty soon. Only one time zone change though, right? Coming from New York down here.
Yeah, I think I can handle that one. And I'll be arriving Monday morning and visiting some of the participating accounts and things. So they got some swag and toys to play with. And then we'll get the ball rolling that night with Turkey and the Wolf.
Yeah, that's going to be fun. Well, Jim, don't worry. You get off the plane. We'll put a Sazerac in you. You'll be fine with a 1 hour time difference.
I think that'll be a good help. Yeah.
That's what I call time zone adjustment here in New Orleans. But so, Jim, let's talk a little bit about the event, because we've been talking about it, and as you know, talking about it on the show here a little bit. You were on with me a few weeks ago. We talked a little bit about the background of South African wines, and we'll come back to that. But this is the first time that Wines of South Africa has taken on an event of this nature, doing a week-long series of things.
That's right, yeah. First time, and we really felt like New Orleans was the right place to do it. I just see a lot of potential for the wines with the local foods, and a lot of people down there seem really, really keen to work with us. So glad to be there.
Yeah, and so Jim, let's back up a little bit, because you've been coming down to New Orleans for a number of years, and generally what you've been doing is putting on a master class, right? A 2-hour seminar. Hey, Jim, can you do me a favor? We're getting a little bit of background noise. Is there any way you can maybe move somewhere a little quieter?
I'm sorry. I thought, you know, I
kind of in transit to another meeting, and
gotcha.
So I thought I'd be able to sit outside, but it's raining here in New York. So,
okay. Fair enough. We will not ask you to get wet, Jim. That goes too far. That goes beyond the call of duty. So, yeah, no problem. No, don't worry about it. Okay. So you had been doing these master classes and two-hour seminars, mostly industry people, and then now sort of taking a leap to, I think, bring it to the consumer more directly, right?
Yeah, we are. I mean, we're kind of a small team compared to some of the other wines of out there. I mean, if you look at the budgets that some of the European countries have, so I'm a one-man team. So we've really kind of focused on the trade as just a way of kind of concentrating where we spend our time and energy. But I mean, ultimately, we need people who work in the shops to see that not just that the wines are good, but that there's a receptivity and interest in the wines from their consumers. So we need to reach out to the wine drinkers themselves. And I think this is one of the first times we really made a big effort to do that in a few years. So we're kind of been retrenching, and now we're moving forward with that.
So it's a logical step forward then to do this and then get those that you've been sharing with in the industry here in New Orleans for a number of years and really around the country. I think New Orleans is not unique in this, right? I mean, we're talking about sharing the love of South African wines, which, you know, I have a great deal of interest in as well, that yes, we've gotten people in the industry to understand it in many places anyway. I know New Orleans is certainly not an exception. A lot of people I've been talking to in relation to the week next week are really excited about all of this. It's now taking that and translating it to reach the consumer more effectively.
I think that's right. We do see, someone's buying the wines. We're just seeing a lot of growth this year. The export numbers, according to one industry guideline, has us up about 13%. When a lot of the other import countries are actually kind of flat or even negative. So we feel like the message is getting out there. But like you say, now it's time to take the next step.
That's going to be fun. And I think one of the things that was really smart, and we have some time here, Jim, so we'll get into, because I'd like to talk a little bit, circle back a little bit on the history and the market, as it were, and how that's developed with South African wines. But I think one of the things that's really well done with South Africa Wine Week is that there's an opportunity. If you want to go do a sit-down dinner, you can do that. But if you just want to, hey, I just want to dip my toe in the water, if you will, there are several places where you can just go to happy hour and get a great price on a glass and just get a glass of wine and see what it's all about.
Yeah, exactly. If you if you just want to, like you say, just kind of taste something and stop by, you can, go by Trio or several other places and then just kind of have a glass and check it out. If you want to get a little education with your time, there's several places where I'll be leading tastings and things like that. So I should put in the wines and put more context for those who would like to get a little wine geeky with their wine. So you can kind of whatever floats your boat.
Yeah, that's great. And lots of stuff. So week long stuff going on where various establishments, you mentioned Trejo being a good example, Mobar I know being another one, several others that are going to run. You can pop in anytime from this coming Monday through next Sunday, and there's going to be specials on wines by the glass. But say, for example, let's pick one just I know off the top of my head where I think you and I are going to do some taping next Wednesday at Bacchanal, 1 to 3 in the afternoon. You're going to be there leading that tasting, right?
That's right, yeah. So, let's be talking to people. I think we're going through four or five wines and just kind of getting an idea of the range. One of the great things with South Africa is Chenin is the most planted grape, but it's not dominant the way Sauvignon Blanc is in New Zealand. So we really get to play with a lot of different things. So, it's whatever kind of wine you like, you're going to find something in South Africa to enjoy.
Yeah, Jim, and we've touched on this, and let's reiterate this because you just mentioned it, is that there's something to be found for everybody. And I think one of the things that people need to understand, too, the value proposition of South African wines is excellent, meaning that you do not need to. And there's some high-end stuff out there, don't get me wrong, but if you got $25 or $30 in your pocket and you want a nice bottle of wine, this is a good region to look at.
Yeah, I think it's a country that really consistently over-delivers at almost every price point, especially like if you want a good example is like an $18 bottle of Cabernet, or even for a restaurant like a Cabernet by the glass. You want to go for a domestic wine, I think the good ones are really kind of pricing themselves out, like a Napa Cab or something like that. Whereas a South African wine, you can get a really top quality wine at that price point.
That's a really good point, Jim, because I think, you know, in all fairness, yes, there's a lot of great Napa Cabs out there. We know that. But if we really want to get something that's well made and well put together, and I'm not saying, you know, super exceptional, going to get a 100-point rating across the board, but still, to get something, you're going to be dropping $60, $70 retail, $80, $90, $100 a bottle, whereas, again, $25, $30 a bottle, maybe if you're really stretching on a lot of stuff, at least that's available in this market, Jim, and, of South Africa wines, if you're dropping $40, you're getting something special.
Yeah. Well, there's a great, I want to talk about points. I think it was last year, Wine Spectator looked at several different countries and said, what's the average price to get a 90 plus wine? And of the four or five countries they had on the chart, South Africa was the cheapest by far. And I think it was average price for a 90 plus point wine was $40.
Wow.
You know, whereas for France, it was 120.
Wow.
Or, you know, or over 100. I don't remember exactly, but over 100. So, you know, think of how much wine you're getting for your money when you're buying South African.
I think that's great with bang for the buck. Well, Jim, do me a favor. Stick around for a second. We're going to talk with you a little bit more. We're going to take our mandatory commercial break and play a little Fats Domino here, the late, great Fats Domino. A little bit of I'm Walking. Friends, we're chatting with Jim Clark from Wines of South Africa. Going to be here hosting South Africa Wine Week coming up next week, kicking off on Monday. We're going to talk with Jim a little bit more after the break. Come on back.
Locally inspired and nationally recognized, Dickie Brennan Steakhouse is located in the French Quarter. Dickie Brennan Steakhouse serves USDA prime beef, Gulf seafood, and innovative Creole dishes. Come experience why Maxim magazine and Playboy named it among the nation's top steakhouses. Running short on time? The full menu is available in the bar for quicker and more casual dining. Dickie Brennan's 5 After 5 Happy Hour Special is back. Dickie Brennan Steakhouse is located in the French Quarter at 716 Iberville.
Looking for a bottle of wine to impress your friends and family? Miro Cellars from California's Russian River Valley is the perfect wine for any occasion. Miro Cellars searches the region for the finest grapes to make their one-of-a-kind specialty wines. Award-winning winemaker Miro Chelikov considers the particular geology and seasonal climate of each vineyard when selecting the most interesting grapes the region has to offer. Because Miro has complete freedom to make precisely the wines he loves best, the results are spectacular. Let yourself in on one of the best-kept secrets in wine today, Miro Cellars.
Are you looking for a great place to enjoy great handcrafted and vintage cocktails? Victory is located at 339 Barone Street in the heart of downtown New Orleans. We have a variety of spirits, a talented team of bartenders, and great gourmet small plates. Our mission? To preserve an era when cocktails were made with artistry and pride. Grab your friends and come enjoy the ultimate cocktail experience. Give us a call to book your next private event, or go to our website, victorynola.com. See you soon. Cheers.
Blue Monday. How are you, Blue Monday? Got to work, plan to sleep all day. Here come Tuesday. Oh, Tuesday. I'm so tired, got no time.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the Nola Drink Show. Brian Diaz here with you, WGSO 990 AM in New Orleans and in podcast land, wherever you may be. Yep, more Fats Domino, Blue Monday. Lost a great one the other day. I'll say the king of rock and roll. I'm going that way. But we're chatting with Jim Clark here from Wines of South Africa, and we're kicking off South Africa Wine Week here on Monday. Let's do this, Jim, because we have a couple bottles in front of us, so I'm gonna make you blind taste with actually no wine in front of you.
as but, blind as it gets.
Yeah, it's as blind as it gets, man. But you are a true pro, so I know you're going to be able to handle this. And I'm going to use this for frame of reference, or I'm going to use this if only because this is what we do on the show. We drink wine and talk about it. We have the 2010 AA Badenhorst White Blend and Shedden Base. Very interesting wine.
Yeah, so this is...
And if I put you on the spot too much, then tell me I put you on the spot too much.
If you throw it, I'll hit it.
Okay, sweet.
let's see. Yeah, so you got Adi Badenhorst. Well,
is one of the interesting guys who started exploring this area called the Swartland, which is had grapes for a long time, but it's been kind of a overlooked region. It was, you know, selling grapes to co-ops or back in the days when brandy production was a big deal, the grapes were going to brandy. Well, about, let's see now, it's almost 10 years ago. Well, almost, yeah, exactly 10 years ago would have been Audie's first vintage. And what was happening is the young guys like Audie, who was working for a Stellenbosch winery, wanted to start his own project. Well, if you want to buy, you know, grapes or land in Stellenbosch, it's like buying land in Napa. It's expensive and it's probably not even for sale for that matter. So they started looking at this area called the Swartland and discovering that these great old vine vineyards could really make great wine if you just started farming them better. And he was a real leader up there in that regard. And then in this case, with a white blend, so Chenin Blanc, even in these warm climates like Swartland, which is one of the warmer parts of the growing area in South Africa, still keeps its freshness. So what these winemakers are doing is keeping that as the spine of the wine, provide freshness and kind of give it liveliness, and then layering on other varieties. And in this case, I mean, every time I talk to Audie, he gives me a different set of percentages for the grapes. So, but you're talking about like Palomino and Grenache Blanc,
Verdeo, Roussanne, Viognier, Semillon. Yeah,
exactly. Mm-hmm. So these Southern French kind of Mediterranean white varieties that often can be a little bit flabby on their own. So it's a really great combination. And in this case, he makes it a little bit sort of an oxidative style. So there's some oxygen exposure. So it still has this great fruitiness, but then there's this wonderful almondy touch to it as well.
You know, thank you for saying that, Jim, because there's a very sherry-esque quality to this that I find very interesting. So is he leaving some of the vessels open to more oxygen exposure? I'm taking it deliberately then, and that's how he's achieving the oxidative effect?
Yeah. That's partially it, and not so much leaving them open as much as leaving
the space open, not topping.
Not topping them off, yeah. So as they evaporate with the naturally, you get that oxygen exposure because the oxygen fills that space.
Right.
Yeah.
It's very nice because it reminds me very much. As a matter of fact, when I first had a sip of it, I was looking at the blend on the back, you know, as you mentioned, majority Chenin, about one third Chenin, and then it goes from there. And I'm thinking, oh, this is going to be, you know, kind of a floral, probably good acid structure, these sorts of things. And I had a sip and I'm like, whoa, this kind of tastes like sherry. And I wasn't really expecting that. It drinks very much like a sherry, which is very nice.
Yeah. And especially, I mean, you've got the 2010 and then different parts of the country, they're kind of featuring different vintages right now. So I think you've got 7 years of age on that one. So that's a little bit of it's had some bottle time as well. So I think that helps.
And I think that makes a lot of sense because I think we've had the fruit and some of the acid structure come back in alignment, I'm going to guess, to the oxidative nature because of that bottle aging. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Well, and Jim, what you mentioned Swartland, and I think something we talked about 3-4 weeks ago when we did the show for Mobar leading up to South Africa Wine Week, and we touched on Swartland a little bit, and that I think it's an interesting story, and I don't know tons about it. You're the expert here, but I think it's somewhat a good example to use when we talk about South African wines, where, as you said earlier, it's a place where grapes have been grown for a long time, much like South Africa, but a place that's figured out its own identity and sense of place really in recent years.
Yeah, I think that's true. And it's, you know, some of the more like Stellenbosch, I think we've had a good clue because Stellenbosch was always focused on premium wine. But we've had these regions that may have done premium wine even before the 20th century. But the 20th century, a lot of the pressure within the industry, just because of the economics within South African things, led to a real oddity sort of approach to winemaking. So it was like everyone was trying to make the equivalent of $10 wine. And it kind of dumbed down the industry for a while, and especially in some of these more, you know, lesser known regions. And Swartland was one of those. And that started changing, obviously, with the end of apartheid in the 90s. But it really accelerated when winemakers, especially these younger winemakers, worked vintages abroad and were able to start bringing back what they were seeing happening in other parts of the world and really focusing purely on making really high-quality wine, and not just high-quality wine, but high-quality wine that tastes of South Africa.
A sense of place, right?
Exactly. You taste of South African Shiraz from the early 2000s, and it's really trying to emulate, typically, the Australian style, because they knew the Australian style was doing very well in export markets. Nowadays, you taste one, and it's going to be very different. It's actually, if anything, it looks more toward French, you know, Rhone styles. But
but what it really is just representing what South Africa is with the terrain, what the terroir gives them.
Right. And this is a really excellent point. And I think, and you and I talked about this a few weeks ago when you were on the show. And I think this is one of the themes that I really want people to understand with South African wines, especially experiencing these wines next week, which I want to encourage everybody to do. This is a great opportunity to try things that maybe you haven't tried, open up a new avenue, if you will, in your wine world, is that it's a great way to explore a place that has found a sense of place and realized and achieved its own identity really in fairly recent years. And what's being discovered or what's coming from that is truly unique. And I think that, you know, a lot of the wine world has been very well established for a long period of time, and whether they've gotten it right or not, have what they think is a sense of identity. I think we see kind of the story, Jim, and we got to take a break here in just a second, but we see the story of South African wines unfolding in front of our eyes. And I don't think you get to see that in many other places.
No, it's every time I go down there, usually twice a year, and every time I find something new and exciting as winemakers just explore and realize what the vineyards are giving them. You're very right.
Yeah, that's great. I think, and it's really, really exciting. Well, Jim, let's do this. We're going to take a little bottom of the hour break here. Can I get you to stick around for one more segment, and we'll talk a little bit more about the events coming up, and we got one more wine to taste. Does that work for you?
It sounds great.
Thanks. Friends, we are chatting with Jim Clark, who is the U.S. Market Manager for Wines of South Africa and behind South Africa Wine Week coming up next Monday, starting next Monday here in New Orleans. And we're going to talk with Jim a little bit more after the break. And we're circling back here. The Fat Man, 1949, maybe the first rock and roll record. Come on back.
Hi, this is Kevin Richards with Sazerac Rye Whiskey. It's football and festival season, and there's no better way to enjoy Sazerac Rye than in a pothole cocktail. Just fill up a glass with ice and your favorite root beer, and add 2 ounces of Sazerac Rye for a truly tasty toddy. Named after the city's most iconic of inconveniences, the pothole is proof that New Orleans never takes itself too seriously. Sazerac Rye Whiskey, the way New Orleans does whiskey.
Brian Diaz here with NOLA Drinks. Discover South Africa Wine Week from October 30th to November 5th, featuring numerous events at fine restaurants, bars, and bottle shops all around the area. Just like New Orleans, South Africa is a place of great cultural diversity and produces fine wines of tremendous value and character. From crisp, refreshing Chenin Blanc to complex red blends, there's something for every wine lover. To learn how you can experience South Africa Wine Week, visit WOSA, that's Wines of South Africa, WOSA.US/events for more. And until then, cheers, y'all.
Hey, New Orleans, Jack Jelenko here, local wine guy. Want a great alternative to over-oak Chardonnay? Try Yamhill Valley Vineyards Pinot Blanc, a wonderfully balanced white wine from the oldest family estate in McMinnville, Oregon, in the Willamette Valley. It's round and ripe like a Chardonnay, but without the heavy oak and sweetness of big commercial corporate Chardonnays. Yamhill Valley Vineyard Pinot Blanc, a great value under $20. Ask for it wherever you buy wine. Cheers.
The French Market offers daily entertainment and delicious food and drink options throughout our 6-block district. Whether you crave raw oysters or fresh produce, authentic confections or healthy daiquiris, you can find it here. Sit at one of our cafes and hear live local music. Enjoy a muffaletta, po' boy, salad, or cheese plate in the farmer's market. Check out our pop-up farmer's markets on Wednesdays and Saturdays for even more fresh food options. History is being made fresh daily at the French Market. Visit frenchmarket.org for food, drink, retail, and event listings.
Are you looking for the best buns? Well, we have them at Bayou Burger in the Quarter. Wait till you bite into one of our acclaimed burgers like the Cowboy Burger, Tiebreaker Shrimp Burger, the world-famous Gator Burger, or you can build your own with endless combinations. It's all fresh meat, never ever frozen. Everywhere you look, there's big screen TVs where you'll never miss a minute of the action. Boasting the largest balcony dining in the French Quarter, you can watch all the action pass you by on the street. Find the best burgers in action at Bayou Burger. 501 Bourbon at St. Louis for the best buns on bourbon. It's Bayou Burger, baby.
Did you know that there's a vineyard and winery making quality table wines just 1 hour north of New Orleans? At Pontchartrain Vineyards, we produce award-winning wines from our 15-acre vineyard, as well as premium wine grapes sourced from the West Coast. Try our light, crisp, Louisiana-grown Blanc du Bois, or have a glass of Chardonnay, Zinfandel, or our Cab Syrah blend made right here in Louisiana. There's something for everyone at Pontchartrain Vineyards. For more information, go to PontchartrainVineyards.com.
Locally inspired and nationally recognized, Dickey Brennan Steakhouse is located in the French Quarter. Dickey Brennan Steakhouse serves USDA prime beef, Gulf seafood, and innovative Creole dishes. Come experience why Maxim Magazine and Playboy named it among the nation's top steakhouses. Running short on time? The full menu is available in the bar for quicker and more casual dining. Dickey Brennan's 5 After 5 Happy Hour Special is back. Dickey Brennan Steakhouse is located in the French Quarter at 716 Iberville.
Oh, when the saints go marching in. Oh, when the saints go marching in. I want to be in that number. When the saints go marching in. Oh, when the sun refuses to shine. Oh, when the sun refuses to shine. I still want to be in that number.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the NOLA Drink Show. Brian Diaz here with you, WGSO 990 AM in New Orleans. Thanks for listening. Yes, we are playing Fats Domino. There you go, when the saints go marching in, and we are chatting with my friend Jim Clark, who is from Wines of South Africa. Jim, when are you actually joining us down here in New Orleans?
I'll be hitting the ground Monday morning.
Oh, okay, good. So you're going to hit the ground running, and you are a man with a passport and plane tickets. So you just got back from Japan. Did you go anywhere in between, or did you go straight back home to New York and then coming down here?
Trying to get over the jet lag here in New York.
Fair, and no one's asking you for more, but that's great. And I know you probably had a lot of emails. I tried, Jim, to spare you the CC on a lot of emails, but I know you got a lot of emails.
Well, I also know that everyone gets an auto reply every time they email me, so I think that discourages people from CCing me because everyone gets annoyed about getting those bouncing back up.
It was, Jim, a very polite auto respond. It wasn't like, why the hell are you emailing me while I'm on my honeymoon, which I think you could have done. Well, Jim, we're tasting. I always like to use wine as a jumping off point when we come back in. So this is also very. This one I have never tasted before. The Storm Point 2016 Red Blend and Sanso Base, which I think people maybe don't expect a wine to lead with. I think a couple of interesting things here. One, the varietal, and two, we should probably talk a little bit about how. Of course, we're talking about the Southern Hemisphere, so you're thinking 2016, man, that's got to be new for a red wine. But we're about 6 months deeper into the process than we might actually think.
Yeah. And Sinso has really taken an interesting spot in South Africa. It's not a big part of the plantings these days. It's only 1.4%. But historically, it's been very important. And a lot of today's winemakers are really taking a new look at it, either in a blend like this or sometimes it's 100% Sinso. And what they're finding is it does really well in the warm climates, and it keeps its freshness. Again, it's sort of like Chenin in that sense. It's it bears something in common with Chenin Blanc. So you can make these fresh, lighter wines instead of making heavy bruisers, and that's always something. Is I mean, that's exactly what you want to drink in a hot, when it's hot and summery out. So it really suits what they want to drink and what the growing conditions can give them. So.
Yeah, Jim, one of the things that I really like about it, and I think, and Sanso demonstrates this very nice, and the rest of the blend is Syrah and Carignan. And with what it really reminds me of, the way it's drinking like certain Beaujolais as a Gamay Noir, right? Where we're getting some nice minerality on this. We're getting some nice bright fruit, a nice touch of a floral. But then a nice, it's not overwhelming in the mid palate, and then we're getting a really nice acid structure at the end of the wine. So this is, one of the things, again, I want to emphasize this, is that great porch sipper, I think, as you were just saying, or stoop sipper, as we say here in New Orleans. But this, so you can drink it, slight chill on it in warmer weather. But this is going to go really well with a lot of things that require that acid structure to stand up to a little bit of spice and that sort of thing, if you're on the red wine bent.
Yeah. This is actually a really good, not this particular brand, but I was having Sinso last year with Thanksgiving. It's a great Thanksgiving. That kind of red fruit sweetness, great with your cranberries. It's not going to overwhelm the turkey.
it's flexible with the food. I really like South Africans. So I mean, it's not very patriotic, I suppose, but it really works well with the food. So.
Well, Jim, let's look at it this way. If we're talking about good red wines that actually go with Thanksgiving, I mean, here's what we're talking about, right? Like Beaujolais that I mentioned, I think is, you know, with the Gamay Noir is fair. We can talk about Pinot Noir, I think, and then something like this. So I think it's very fair to say. And, you know, let's talk about, you know, Thanksgiving is supposed to be, it's supposed to be a multicultural event. I'm just going to say it. So I think we can bring in South African wines for that.
All right.
way to stay out of the political thing. I'm just going to give my cultural commentary here, Jim, a little bit. But tell us a little bit about this producer, because I am not familiar with Stormpoint.
Well, this is actually, so there's a wonderful Australian specialist importer based in Philly called Vine Street. And there's an Australian winemaker called Mick Craven, who's been working, married to South African woman, who's working in Stellenbosch now. And so they got connected, and this Australian importer was so impressed by what's happening in South Africa that they took on this guy, Mick Craven, and a couple other brands. But they're all small producers. And they said, well, look, if you're going to make kind of boutique wines, they said, well, if we're going to bring a whole container over from South Africa, we need, we need something that we can move in a little bit more quantity. And so they together with the winemaker, they said, well, let's do this red blend. And they also do I think it's a straight Chenin or a Chenin-based blend. So originally it was just kind of to help fill the container, but what it meant is it just, they created a really great value wine. So this wine's on the shelf for, I think it's around $15.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And it's really over-delivered. It got in the Texom International Wine Awards, both the white and the red got golds last year. And that was the first time I tasted them, actually, was judging at that. So
I think it's great. 13.5% alcohol, which sits very nicely. It's a really well-balanced wine. It presents itself really well, front palate, mid palate, and finish is excellent. And I think about some of the things, you know, here, we were talking about, Jim, with Thanksgiving and these sorts of things. Grilled goldfish is going to be fantastic with this. I think actually that's kind of making me hungry. I'm thinking like pompano or drum or something like that with a little bit of grill behind it. I think it's going to taste great. And then I think it's also going to go pretty good with some, you know, barbecue that's not ripping hot barbecue, but something that complements some of the dryness with some heavier sweetness from barbecue, I think would go great with this as well.
I think that's pretty cool.
I like it. So I'm getting, this is what always happens in this phase of the show, is I get thirsty and hungry. Well, Jim, let's do this. Let's talk a little bit. So you're getting here Monday. We got a week long set of events. Some events are one-off events, meaning you want to show up for the tasting at the given and appointed time, and then other stuff you can go do and just kind of pop in whenever you want and go try a glass or two. You want to highlight some stuff, or tell people about it.
I mean, there's so many different ones, it's kind of hard to who to choose, but Effervescence, I think, is a great place to kind of kick off the week because they're doing South African bubbly.
Yes.
And Tap Classique, which is the official designation for bubbly made in South Africa, but by the champagne method. So you get all that texture and beautiful mouthfeel that you get from a champagne, but here from South Africa. So you can experience that over at Effervescence. Mobar, right around the corner from there, is down the street, is going to be doing a bunch of wines by the glass. Also, Maypop, Lofo, Mondo, all doing by the glass programs. At Rosedale, we're doing not just a set of South African wines by the glass, but paired with a special dinner menu that they're going to offer all week. And on Wednesday, which is the first day of the week that they're going to be open from when the promotion starts, I'll actually be there. So I'll kind of be there to answer questions for the dinner and things like that and kick it off for people who want to learn a little bit more and not just enjoy it with their foods, but get some knowledge as well.
Jim, with the wine the wine dinner at Rosedale, is it a set time? Or can you just make reservations and that menu is going to be served? Do we know?
It's you can just make reservations. And I'm not going to do a speech with each course or anything. That's more okay. I'm going to kind of come and work the room and I'll come to your table and say what's going on.
That's good. Work the room. That'll be good. The food's going to be great. Yep. That's a Mondo's sister restaurant, correct?
Exactly.
Yeah. And that'll be really fun. We got a tasting at Pearl Wine Company on Thursday, their usual Thursday tasting from 5 to 7. I know you'll be at that one. Yep. I mentioned Bacchanal. They do their regular Wednesday tasting from 1 to 3, which, as you touched on, that's a good time for wine geeks to come if you can get out of work or if you're in the industry. And then they do their Saturday tasting. Are you going to be at the Saturday one also?
Yep, I'll be at both of those, yeah.
Okay. You're going to be everywhere. Jim.
Yeah, we've got Simone's Market is doing a tasting Friday evening, so you know, get up work for the weekend and come by there. We mentioned Trail before. Brennan's 4 to 6 on Wednesday. We're doing kind of focusing on aperitif wines to kind of kick off your evening. So we'll have you know, some lighter Chenins, we'll have some bubbly, that sort of thing. That you need to go to Eventbrite and get tickets because there, I think there's only 30 spots for that.
Okay.
The details are on the Brennan's website.
Okay, great. Martin, yeah. Martin Wine Cellar in Mandeville, want to give them a mention.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, they're doing, so that's the Martin Wine Cellar, the one in Mandeville across Lake. If you're on the North Shore and listening, don't think you're shut out. You don't have to go very far. You can go over there. Pretty much what they're doing, 4:30 to 6:30, pretty much all week. If you come by, and they're going to have several wines open each day at the end of their business hours. And but as they said, it's 4:30 to 6:30, but if you come by early and ask nicely, they will open something for you, which they typically do at that store. So they're going to have a smattering of stuff open. Then I know it'll culminate, I believe, on Thursday with a larger tasting with several of the wines.
Yeah. The Wine Institute in New Orleans is also going to have a number of things open. I think they've got a really broad selection. So if you really want to, you know, explore a range in one spot, I think they're going to be a great place to stop by. And then kind of a funny, the Turkey and the Wolf is doing their spelling bee in the evening Monday night. So it's kind of our kickoff event in effect. They're going to have Beaumont Chenin Blanc for $10 a glass, and then they'll also be making a special cocktail from Caperitif, which is sort of a vermouth. So it's an aromatized, fortified wine, but it's one that was originally made in the Cape in South Africa at the beginning of the 20th century, and Adi Bodenhurst, who's the white wine you were just trying, and together with a Danish bartender, have recreated the recipe. And it's actually for the botanicals that they infuse in it are all local plants from the Western Cape that are indigenous to that area and you won't find in the rest of the world.
That'll be really neat. I don't know if you caught this, Jim. I know because you were out of town. We did a show last week where we taped most of the show at Bacchanal, and we were talking about what they were going to be up to and some other things about Bacchanal out there in the Bywater. And my good buddy, Brett Tilden, who runs the bar at Turkey and the Wolf, happened to be there, as he often is. And Brett popped on, and we talked a little bit about that. I know he's excited to do this on Monday to kind of kick things off.
Great.
Yeah, it's gonna be a lot of fun. So Jim, we can tell people they can go to the website is WOSA.us, and you can go to /events and see all kinds of great stuff. So again, WOSA.us/events, and you can kind of pick your spots. You can go do some specific stuff. You can go just pop into one of your favorite establishments. I will encourage you to try something new and go do some tasting. And Jim's going to be, we're going to clone Jim because apparently he's going to be in about 15 different places at one time, but you'll get to meet Jim. So, and that'll be a lot of fun, Jim. We're looking forward to it. And then of course, what we're going to do next Thursday is we're going to kind of culminate our portion as your official broadcast partner here on the Nola Drink Show. We're going to do some stuff in the studio, and you and I are going to plot this tomorrow, but we'll have a fun show next Thursday. We're going to drink some South African wine and bring some people in and talk about it.
That's going to be fun.
Looking forward to it, Jim. Thank you so much. Best of luck with everything coming up. We're going to be talking about it quite a bit more. Go out and check this out. WOSA.us/events. Great wines. It's going to be a great opportunity to engage with a wine region that maybe you've not. And you're going to meet my friend Jim Clark, who's a good guy. So, Jim, thanks for taking time out, my friend. I'll talk to you tomorrow, and I will see you on Monday.
Sounds great. Always a pleasure.
Thank you, Jim.
Take care.
Absolutely. Friends, we're going to take a little break here on the Nola Drink Show, and we're going to be right back with some closing thoughts, a little more Fats Domino. Hey, here's one that we play on the show all the time. Whiskey Heaven. Kind of weird. The Any Which Way You Can soundtrack, which is the sequel to the Clint Eastwood film Every Which Way But Lose. There you go.
Open Bible on the table, in an empty bottle on the floor. Last night I thought I died and went to Whiskey Heaven. You know the sun never shines in Whiskey Heaven. It rained Jack Daniels all the time.
Are you tired of drinking the same wines? Switch it up. Try the Kreutz Family Cellars wine.
Kreutz Family Cellars is a small, family-owned winery in Sonoma County that makes wines from some of the most prized vineyards throughout Northern California. Each bottle of Kreutz Family Cellars wines has a magnolia on the label. The magnolia is a symbol of the family's southern roots and their way of life. True, honest, and fun. Look for the magnolia and pick up a bottle of Kreutz Family Cellars wines today.
Hi, New Orleans. It's Laura from Sobu, and I'm here with Chef Juan Carlos.
Sobu's got happier hour is 3 to 6 from 3 to 6.
It's bar bars, sips, and snacks, all for $3 to $6 from 3 to 6 p.m. every day.
Laura's got something to please everyone at the bar for happier hour, all for 3 to 6 here at Sobu.
And we know you'll want to try a smoky pulled pork taco or any of the other delicious snacks on our happier hour menu.
Sobu's happier hour every day from 3 to 6, 310 Charter Street in the quarter.
Complimentary parking next door at the W Hotel.
Savory crab meat cheesecake and decadent white chocolate bread pudding are Palace Cafe originals. For nearly 26 years, Palace Cafe has been serving award-winning cuisine in the historic Warline Music Building. Located on Canal Street at the edge of the French Quarter, Palace Cafe is open 7 days a week for breakfast, lunch, and dinner, and open for jazz brunch on the weekends. Make sure to try one of their refined classic cocktails or a glass of wine from their nationally recognized wine list. Palace Cafe is located at 605 Canal Street.
This time I'm walking to New Orleans. I'm walking to New Orleans. I'm gonna need to parachute when I get through walking these blues. When I get back to New Orleans, I've got my suitcase in my hand. I'm leaving here today. Yes, I'm going back home to stay. Yes, I'm walking to New Orleans. You used to be my honey till you spent all my money. No use for you to cry. I see you by and by.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the show. Thanks for tuning in today. Really appreciate it. Yep, a little bit more Fats Domino there for you. I'm walking to New Orleans. Special song for me, friends, because among other things, when I was growing up as a little boy, one of my favorite things to do was actually sit in the living room with my dad. I grew up in the Bay Area of California, as frequent listeners know, and I've been coming to New Orleans my whole life, and married to a lovely New Orleans native who is actually sitting next to me, and she heard there was free wine, so she's here, and I'm just teasing, my lovely wife Sylvia, and anyway, so I've been coming to New Orleans my whole life, and you know, experienced some of the music here going back into the 70s as a little kid. And one of my favorite things to do was sit with my dad, who passed away about 4 years ago, and listen to 45s. And we used to go out and shop for 45s. And that was always a treat to go with my dad to the record store. There's a term for you. And you'd flip through the 45s and buy a couple things. And I was usually allowed to pick out one, and he'd pick out a few. And then we'd go home and we'd put them on the platter and we'd spin them. And it was always a lot of fun. And Fats Domino was somebody who featured prominently in that process. And Walking to New Orleans was one that we used to listen to all the time. And my dad, who was very much a character and very much a super outward guy, a total extrovert, but he really wanted to work up the courage to do karaoke, which you would think for somebody like him would be really easy, but was kind of gun shy. So he finally, not too long before he passed away, actually worked up the courage to go to a particular place, a local establishment where my mom and dad lived, and do karaoke. And he did Walk Into New Orleans, of which there is this really grainy cell phone video that we still have, which is, it's not meant for public consumption because, man, the vocal delivery was not good. But the sentimentality of it was excellent. So it was really a lot of fun. So always a special place in my heart for that song, Fats Domino, because of that reason. And others will also always have a special place in my heart. And again, our condolences here on the Noah Drink Show to the family and all of music and New Orleans music and culture, an indelible mark made by that man. So there you go. Want to mention a couple events coming up because we didn't actually get that way here on the show. Like every weekend here in New Orleans, go figure, there is something happening. A couple big things happening. Louisiana Seafood Festival, big deal, going on. Waldenburg Park kicks off tomorrow, goes Saturday through Sunday, pretty much all day. Going to be all kinds of good seafood out there, going to be all kinds of good fun, free to enter, I believe, if I'm not mistaken. And then I think maybe you get food and drink tickets. I could be wrong about that. No, you got to actually buy, you have to actually buy admittance. I don't think it's particularly expensive. And there's VIP stuff. I think you might be able to sort of show up to some of this. But the music lineup, friends, is fantastic. It's kind of like most of these festivals. They start out as one day and then they move to a bigger venue and then they go to 2 days and then they go to 3 days. So Louisiana Seafood Festival 2017 is no exception to that. Kicks off music tomorrow at 11 o'clock in the morning, of course, and that is Christian Surpass and Ghost Town, our good friends, who are going to be opening the day, closing the stage at 7:30 tomorrow night, Mark Broussard, which is going to be a lot of fun. Then Saturday we have, I think this is going to be really interesting, Space and Harmony, which is going to be a band that features members of the Revivalists and Naughty Professor. And if you haven't seen either of those bands individually, you should. And then collectively, that's going to be great. Bucktown All-Stars, Rockin' Doopsie Jr., Bonorama, The Soul Rebels, and Dumpsta Funk. Can you come up with a better lineup than that? And then, for example, like on Sunday, Gal Holiday and the Honky Tonk Review, Cyril Neville and Swamp Funk with some special guests. That's going to be a lot of fun. So great music out there at Waldenburg Park. And then, of course, the big music fandango there at City Park, Voodoo Festival, which, man, Kendrick Lamar, Foo Fighters, The Killers, LCD Sound System. So a lot of non-New Orleans people, but great music nonetheless. That is a huge fandango. I know tickets are still on sale for all 3 days. That's also Friday through Sunday, so go check that out at City Park. Weather's going to be beautiful, a little cool. Put on a little bit of a sweater. Going to be good, but that's going to be a lot of fun. And there's always great music at Voodoo Festival. And then lastly, we touched on this briefly when Lincoln Case was on the show. Pontchartrain Vineyards closing out. If you want something a little bit more low-key, you can just roll up to Pontchartrain Vineyards and go check out the Creole String Beans there in the vineyard. Going to be a lot of fun, so go check that out, PontchartrainVineyards.com. Friends, we're going to be back with a new show next week. We're going to talk about South Africa Wine Week, but we're going to bring in some people who participated in South Africa Wine Week and talk a little bit more about that. It's been fun being back in the studio. Good to see my buddy BJ here working the board, as always, fresh off vacation, as I am, with some color. And I needed it. I was pretty white just in time for winter, and I will be back with a new show. Friends, be good to each other. Take care of each other. Use your turn signal. And until then, cheers, y'all. To see and I like to see the lazy Mississippi hurrying into spring.